Hello out there. We are live right now. What is going on? Stephen Ignoramus here. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant, episode number 37, 5:50 p.m., August 2nd, 2019. So pleased you could be with us. Call Me Ignorant is a live conversation show, whether with an interesting content creator, an expert in a field, a controversial figure, or with a fellow human being trying to spread a message. Call Me Ignorant will try to solve the problems of the world, conversationally speaking. We are streaming live right now to YouTube, Twitch, Periscope, Mixer, DLive, and Picarto. If you can't catch the show live, you can find it after the fact on the above-mentioned platforms, also on BitChute and FreedomScoop.com. Call Me Ignorant is also available in podcast format on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean. You can find me on Twitter at IgnoramusSteve, join my Discord server linked below in the show description, or send me an email at StephenIgnoramus@gmail.com if you would like to participate in the show. With me on the program today is Rachel Siegel. Rachel is a content creator, an influencer, and speaker in the blockchain space. She distributes content through her platform, Crypto Finally, and she has been featured in more than 50 media sources, and her work is geared towards demographic expansion of the blockchain space and mass adaptation of common consumer culture through entertainment targeting millennial audiences. She is known on social media as Crypto Finally, and you can find her information linked below in the show description. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Rachel. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant.
Hi, Steve. Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, before we talk about I want to do this program on all things crypto. I mean, I know some things about it, but obviously not everything. But before we talk about that, where are you from and how'd you get educated in this space?
Well, before we talk about that, I'm not sure that anybody knows all things crypto. But I am originally from New York. I'm from New York City, and I got involved in the space. I had friends who had a production background. They worked for mainstream production, which is also my background. They came into New York for Consensus, which is one of the larger cryptocurrency conferences that happens in the United States. And I met up with people from the community. I love the community, and I dove headfirst from there.
Did you go to college for it at all? I mean, does one have to study?
No.
Do you just Google stuff? How do you learn about it?
What's funny about that question is that there are so many new university classes and things like that that are coming out now where more people can actually do education about things like blockchain and cryptocurrency. But though I'm not extremely old, I might be a little too old to have caught that wave of sort of formal education about cryptocurrency. I actually went to school for theater and production.
Sweet. Nice. What? Yeah. Did you want to act? Did you want to do theater design? What were you interested in?
I was a writer,
okay.
Writer and director. So I wrote plays and I did direction. I actually started with film. So I did my first 2 years in film and then I switched to theater about midway. So I have a little bit of experience in both. And then I continued to work in theater and film after school. So I worked in I worked for a lot of places. I worked for the Shakespeare in the Park in New York City for a very long time. So I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's a big production that happens in New York and Central Park. Mm-hmm. I worked for the Blue Man Group.
Sweet.
I worked corporate for the Blue Man Group for a few years. social commercial content, production space, that kind of stuff. I worked for Lion King, Wicked, HPE, Weight Watchers, and an assortment of dabbles here and there with stuff like that.
Whoa, sweet. So so here's a question I have for people that are really involved with crypto. Did you buy your first cryptocurrency first, or did you oh, what is this? Let me watch a couple of videos. I mean, I learned about it by just someone who's like, dude, you got to buy some Bitcoin. I bought 0.001 of Bitcoin just to see what it did. What were the first couple months of you getting involved with crypto like?
I think that I probably bought before I started watching videos, but that would just have to do with me meeting so many people in the space, and so upfront, not a lot of people prior to knowing a lot about cryptocurrency attend Consensus and meet all these people who have blockchain companies and cryptocurrency companies. So I bought, then I started getting myself a little more involved. I actually started working with my friends who had introduced me to it, and they had an educational YouTube channel about blockchain and cryptocurrency. So they actually helped me out a lot because they knew a lot about the subjects. They had been working in the field for a while. And having someone physically there, having a real human being who can assist you really does make a difference, especially when it gets a little bit confusing.
Cool. So you went to conventions and stuff like that, and you kind of made friends in the space. And when did you first like start your own platform and stuff?
So I worked with that channel. It was called Kryptonauts. We made educational YouTube videos. I worked with them until about last summer. And then the face of the channel actually got picked up by this larger crypto channel called Altcoin Buzz.
Okay.
And in November, I launched Crypto Finally, which is what I'm doing today. It's my own channel. I focus on demographic expansion of the space and media portrayals of cryptocurrency and how that affects us. I also make fun music videos.
Sweet. Yeah. Okay. And we're going to talk about your music videos later. I actually watched all of them today, so I have a couple questions about that. I'm a musician, so I have some questions about how you actually do the process, but we'll get to that later. And so it said on your website that you've had your work featured and with like big media sites and stuff. What is that like? Like getting your name dropped on camera and I don't know, is that kind of cool or what?
It's fun. So some of those mentions aren't me being mentioned. Some of those are interviews, yeah. Or me being on the channel or doing something like that. But it's been a really wild ride. I've really enjoyed it. It's been a great time. I actually have some new stuff that's brewing and it's going to come out in the next few months that I'm pretty excited about. And I think we can all sort of look forward to. It's sort of a leg off of those things. But it's flattering and it feels good. And I know that I'm working hard and what I'm trying to do. I'm glad that people recognize the importance of, you know, getting people involved, accessibility in the space and, you know, really involving other demographics right now. And that's really my focus.
Gotcha. So, you know, you mentioned increasing the people and the demographics in the field. But what's kind of your long term goal about it? Is just to spread as much awareness as possible and get people to like basically increase the value of crypto? Or do you have a favorite cryptocurrency or anything like that?
Bitcoin.
Bitcoin, yeah.
Definitely Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is king. Bitcoin is dominant. And Bitcoin is really going to be... I'm sorry. I got a little lost in this. But a really good way to describe Bitcoin and why Bitcoin is so important, right, in specific. And I heard this one time and it really stuck with me. There's always a protocol when you use something new on the internet, right? And so when we developed email, we developed a protocol for email. And there were always going to be ways that we could make the email protocol better, right? I could send you something and I could get a receipt of transaction that would allow me to know that you've seen it, for example. That could be something that made the email protocol better. And people have worked on it. People have tried to make those changes. But at the end of the day, we still use the original email protocol because it functions. It does what it's supposed to do. And Bitcoin was the original protocol.
Mm.
Bitcoin is the original protocol. There's no need for advancements. It works exactly as we need it to work. So always Bitcoin. I could answer with a lot of other sort of things. There are other coins that like I hold, obviously not obviously. Some people hold solely Bitcoin. I hold other currencies as well, but always Bitcoin's my number one.
Gotcha. Okay. I think what we're going to do next, I do this with, the first time I have some people, like when I do people that are specific to a certain field, I call this like the rapid fire round where I'm going to say like some terms about crypto and I want you to just answer a quick like definition of what they are. So what is the blockchain?
What is the blockchain?
Yeah, what is that? I mean, I know like probably 50 to 60% of the information about each of these things, but I want to hear it from someone who is actually in the field. Like, what is blockchain? Because it's not just crypto, right? They like the social media Minds is a blockchain-based social media platform. I thought when I learned about blockchain, I thought it was just a cryptocurrency thing, but it's a way of storing information. So yeah, just what is blockchain?
Oh man, in a quick rapid-fire answer.
Doesn't have to be as quick as you want, you know.
Blockchain is it. An immutable decentralized ledger with permanent recordings of transactions.
That was great. I mean, that was awesome. Yeah. That's a great one-line response. Yeah.
That's what it is. So it's immutable, which means that it exists across boards. The blockchain doesn't exist in one place. It's decentralized for that purpose. Not one centralized government can control it. It is a ledger as it permanently records transactions as you would in a ledger. What happens in the blockchain, at least in the case of something like Bitcoin, is that when you were to make a Bitcoin transaction, the blockchain will record that information permanently.
Gotcha. Okay. What is mining? What is like crypto mining?
crypto mining, mining Bitcoin.
Is it just mining, Bitcoin, by the way? Can you mine other crypto, or is it it's just Bitcoin? Right?
Yeah. No, you can mine other cryptos.
Okay, yes. Gotcha. All right, I'm with you. Yeah,
you can. You can mine other cryptos. Okay, so mining Bitcoin. Sorry, I keep saying the word Bitcoin. It's like enrooted in me.
It's hard to not. It's hard to mining, not say Bitcoin. Like I keep like, okay, crypto. There's other ones. But yeah, it's hard not to say that. Yeah.
It's a computing process in which they are inserting sort of a series of codes and basically unlocking Bitcoin. So it's an electronic process. You get a mining machine. You plug it into your wall. It takes up electricity. This is called proof of work. So the proof of work is the cost that you're paying on electricity and what you're putting forth there, and then you receive back the Bitcoin. But it's a series of hashes, and that's a really technological answer. I mean, that I can give you, but it's not a rapid fire one. Yeah. I'm not sure blockchain was either, but it's
fine.
These are very complicated rapid fire subjects.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, it usually goes like this where I'm like, yeah, what is this term? And the person's like, this is not rapid fire. Okay. So what is
it's not that it's unanswerable. It's totally answerable. It's just not like, word association, like hat.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. What is a wallet?
A wallet is a place where you hold your cryptocurrency. So a wallet address would be a series of numbers and letters. It's your public key, and that is where you will hold your cryptocurrency.
Digitally, though, right? Is there a physical wallet as well?
You can get a hardware wallet, and there can be a physical wallet if you would like to do that. You can also have a wallet on your cell phone or your computer or any other digital device. They exist on the internet, but that's a hot wallet, and I don't suggest it.
Okay. And a key, I was going to ask what a key is, but that's basically where there's a bunch of letters and numbers in a row. Some of them are capitalized, some aren't, and that's like, is that what a key is?
Yes. Okay. And there's a public key and a private key, and those are two very different things. A public key is something that you can send a cryptocurrency into, and a private key is what you need in order to take it out.
Okay, gotcha. All right, and you kind of that's basically it for the rapid fire round, and you basically already answered how to store it. But so if someone, like, this one's weird. If someone wanted to steal it, do they have to either get your private key, or they have to get your physical, they have to hack your system and get access to your passwords and stuff? Like, how do you steal Bitcoin? I know that's weird, but.
There are a few different ways that you can steal Bitcoin. So one is, they get access to your private keys. That's like a really easy in. They can just regenerate your wallet. If they get your seed phrase, they can use it to regenerate your wallet and get into it. If they hack a larger system, so say you do have a hot wallet, say you're holding your money on an exchange or online, if they get access to that exchange, they have access to what would be reflected as your holdings of Bitcoin. If someone got physically had their hands on the device that you hold cryptocurrency on, that would be a way that they could do it. And then there's also something called SIM swapping, which is a little, that one's, you know what? It's not that it's a hard crime to accomplish. It's just that is less seen now and then. So SIM swapping is basically where they call your telephone provider and they tell them, hey, I'm so-and-so, please give me their phone number. And then they use 2FA to hack you.
Okay. Gotcha. I've never heard of that one. That's interesting. Okay. Have you ever, have you ever known anyone that has gotten a bunch of Bitcoin stolen from them?
Yeah, I think that everyone in crypto knows someone who's had crypto stolen.
Really?
For sure.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated, but the thing is, like, there are just measures that need to be taken. Not enough people know enough about what's going on, and people are learning new ways to finagle this every single day. I mean, as we grow as a space, you know?
Wow. Okay. Well, thanks for all those definitions. That really helps. And, I'll definitely be, directing some of my listeners back to this, interview to get just a general education on it. It's good to hear it from, like you said about being in the physical room with someone when getting your education earlier. Like, a lot of people don't feel like looking stuff up or watching a video. That, like, sometimes it's, I like talking to people in person. That's one of the reasons I started my channel. So I really appreciate the education and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are what do you use to like track and trade? Do you use like Coinbase? That's what I use. Like, are there better sites than that or ways? Like, some people have their own wallet and they don't use Coinbase, but like, do you have an opinion on what the best site is?
So, okay, Coinbase is really great for people just getting involved in the cryptocurrency space. It's super easy, great user interface, easy to buy Bitcoin or cryptocurrency straight out of your bank account or with a credit card or debit card, which makes it, again, really preferable for people who might not understand a lot about the space. However, greatly recommend you not use Coinbase as a wallet. And the reason for this, what we say in the crypto world is not your keys, not your coins. So when you use Coinbase, they actually do not provide you with your private keys, which is that back key series of letters and numbers that you need to get into your cryptocurrency. Coinbase doesn't give you that. Basically, the number that they're representing on your screen is a mirror of the Bitcoin or cryptocurrency that they owe you. It's not yours. It's technically still theirs the same way that a bank works. The money is in the bank. If the bank loses all the money, you can't take your money out, even though it was in your account and you saw that it was yours, because this is a centralized agency, right? So in cryptocurrency and Coinbase, it's the same thing. So until you have your Bitcoin somewhere else where you actually have your own private keys, it doesn't belong to you. And so say Coinbase runs out of all their Bitcoin and it says you have this much in your account, it's the same thing. It doesn't mean that it's there.
Interesting.
So yeah, get off Coinbase. That's just my first thing. Okay. Once you buy it, take it off, you know, unless you're planning to like, unless you're using it on a daily basis, something like that. But you really want to put it into another wallet. There are lots that you can look into if you want one on your cell phone, similar to Coinbase. There's one called Trust Wallet. Trust Wallet's really great as an app. It's got secure, it's super secure. It gives you a seed phrase, it gives you your own keys, so it makes it yours, and the user interface is on par with Coinbase. The only thing is you can't sell directly from it. You'd have to send back to an account that's linked to your bank account.
Gotcha.
The good thing about that is I don't think you have to KYC for Trust Wallet, which means you don't actually need to give them your government information.
Okay.
If you want to trade and exchange online, Binance is great. They're about to outlaw it in the United States. VPN, cough. But it works really great. You can totally use it as something on your computer. A lot of the altcoins, some of them have their own wallets that come with the coin itself. Like if you actually look into the dev team and what they're doing, and some of those are going to be really secure for what you're trying to do with those. Exodus is another really great one. Ledger is great as a hardware wallet. Trezor is great as a hardware wallet. Elipal is a good hardware wallet. You really do want to use a hardware wallet if you're accumulating enough cryptocurrency.
Wow. All right. Sweet. I didn't know that. Okay. Did you see this letter that the IRS sent to all the crypto users? This is like a week and a half ago.
What's funny is I saw about it on the internet, right? I read about it and I read about like the ramifications of that. But yes, I did see that. What people are saying is that that's probably just a blanket letter they sent out to people who registered for Coinbase.
Mm.
In hopes to gain something. What I thought was funny is that they didn't send a letter to everybody who lost money after the 2017 bull run.
Mm.
so yeah, I did hear about that. I don't think that I was a part of it. I might have been, but I'm not currently at my permanent address, so who knows?
Gotcha.
They don't actually need anything from you, I don't think. I think they're just trying to like let you know.
All right.
You know. I think they sent it as a blanket. So like even people who did properly report their cryptocurrency taxes might have received that letter as well.
Gotcha. Well, okay. I'll look that up. Yeah. So it's just like it's a precaution or just we're kind of watching.
I think it's a precaution. I think that the space is growing. More people are using Coinbase. I think the IRS, you know, what's funny is that like what happened in the cryptocurrency space in 2017, that's not very long ago from now, right? Especially when you're considering like government infrastructure and the way that they view like human beings. Like, we're talking about an app. It started as an app, and now, you know, it probably took them a little while to realize, like, wow, people made a lot of money in 2017. People lost a lot of money in 2019, stuff like that. And I think it really just is a blanket to everyone, because I don't think, you know, just the fact that it's happening is interesting. It means they're considering us. It means they're considering us as like a real something. Like, how many apps get a letter from the IRS?
That's an interesting point. Yeah, it's like it's almost like a compliment. Like, the government sees you. It's like a message of relevance or whatever, right?
Yeah, and my guess is that likely Coinbase, when they initially got started, or the government agencies when Coinbase initially got started, didn't think about the long term tax ramifications that might exist. Now, I believe in it being decentralized. I believe it not having a governing service over it. But when you are talking about the government looking in, that's a big bracket.
Hmm. Yeah. What do you think of Libra, the Facebook cryptocurrency?
Libra is funny.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are talking about it. I think it's really great for the industry, as far as getting people involved and having them hear about cryptocurrency at all. If you've never heard of cryptocurrency before, it's a cool eye opener. A lot of people did invest in crypto when Libra came out, which was cool. The market pumped up a little bit. What was I about to say about it? Something that I thought was an interesting take on it, so I heard this take on it as well, which I thought was kind of cool, was, you know, these major entities like Facebook, like the banks, when they start doing stuff like Libra, when TD Ameritrade starts having cryptocurrency purchases available on their apps, what they're doing is they're trying to join us. You know, if you can't beat them, join them. They see that this is going to be a major force. And the fact that these huge institutions, Facebook, wants to get involved in cryptocurrency really does say something about the future of it. You know, the Winklevoss twins, you know, Gemini, that's kind of interesting and funny. And I just think that, like, they know we're onto something, and it's getting people involved. What I thought was really funny about it too, is everyone in the crypto space was like giving all this shit about Libra and like doing all this, like posting on Twitter and all this stuff. And then Trump made that post that was basically like, fuck Libra.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
it's not money.
Funniest shit post about Libra yet, you know, comes from the president of the United States.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, that's really something. And then he put it in front of everyone's eyes too. Mm. And then the president tweets out like, Bitcoin's not real and Libra's trash. And then Bitcoin pumps up like $400 in the next 2 hours, which is interesting about it lacking government as well.
Do you see the U.S. government or any other government organization making their own? I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense to the dollar's already mostly digital. You know, barely anyone uses cash. But like that's what I had to wrap my head around a little bit, is that like, what is crypto backed by? I mean, I guess if it can't stand on its own, you always have to buy it. You have to either have to mine it, or you have to buy it with some other kind of money. Like, what is it really backed by? I mean, it can buy you food and stuff like that, but I don't know. It just had to wrap my head around like what that even is. But do you see the U.S. ever like creating a U.S. crypto or whatever?
Well, there's, you know, talk about things like USDT, Tether, which actually is backed by the U.S. dollar. And you would consider that like, what the term is, but it's a riskier asset because it is backed by the dollar, which means a similar thing about it being a centralized agency as what I said about Coinbase or the banks, which means if they don't actually have that dollar backing it, it's not really yours. And that can be true no matter what wallet you put it in, because Tether is tied to the dollar. The way that you would consider current cryptocurrency backed, I mean, that's the importance of the blockchain. And that ledger and that immutability is that we know that those transactions are permanent. We can see where they are and where they go. The scarcity factor, the fact that there is a limited amount of Bitcoin, the use case for it, being able to send money all around the world or just to a friend in another room instantly, with no transaction fees taken by the bank, and you can control it in your own hand. This is something that's going to be useful. So there's a use case for it. As well as currency generally only exists if we give it value. Mm. You know, money on the streets of Venezuela, it's the value that we attribute to it. When we inflate the dollar, when federal government cuts tax brackets, you know, this kind of thing, the fact that we can control the US dollar in the same sort of way, currency is just the value that we give to it.
Mm. Interesting.
The limited quantity too. Sorry, that's what I meant by the scarcity, is the 21 million Bitcoin. There's only ever going to be 21 million.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask next. So 21 million, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, do you have any idea how many US dollars are in the world?
Many. many. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, why don't we spend the rest of our time talking about just the work that you do and stuff? Because I stumbled, I think I got your name because I put out a post on Twitter that was just like, yo, who should I interview about crypto? And your name got like tagged into it. And then I messaged you or something like that. And then I watched that the talk you gave. I think it's like a 25-minute talk where you're talking about basically entertainers and getting people expanding the demographic, as I think it says in your message. But what do you actually do with your work on the day-to-day basis? And, you know, then we'll talk about your music videos.
Yeah, I was seeing we have two followers in common, which is interesting.
Okay.
Okay, so I travel and I go to conferences. I meet up with people in the crypto community. That's more or less my day to day. I make videos, and content in the cryptocurrency space. I am a speaker. I do talk about the demographic expansion of the space via media portrayal, which is basically just taking a standard sort of look as the space, at the space as a whole, through pop culture and media. And I look at the historical timeline. So how people in cryptocurrency were portrayed early on as criminals, hackers, nerds, and how that media portrayal has grown and changed over time. So now we're the elite. We are young people with money. We started our own companies. And how that is appealing to a millennial demographic in getting them involved in the space as a whole.
So why don't you name for me a couple of like the early hacker nerd types? And now, and I heard you mention like Katy Perry and Eminem that they talked about in a couple of their songs or whatever. But like, how is that? First of all, when did the guy's name is Satoshi Nakamoto, right? Is that his name?
Satoshi Nakamoto. Yes.
Yeah. And so no one knows if that's even a real person yet, right?
Well, you know, it is a real person or a real entity.
Yeah.
Like, it is real, but we don't know who they are.
Okay,
and
gotcha.
There's lots and lots of debate about who they are, and I think it is the most glorious modern-day mystery.
Yeah, it's awesome, and yeah.
It's historical.
And so I see every couple months there's like a new article about like who it might be, and it's always like a different person, and it's a cool story.
Well, what's interesting about the articles is I think a lot of that is spurred by a lot of like legal stuff that's going on right now. So like Craig Wright like came out and decided to tell everybody he was Satoshi and he's suing everybody, including like my friend Peter, which is wild. You know, that's like to go and show like how small the space is right now. Like people that we interact with on a daily basis are actually involved in this stuff. And then there was the Kleinman case that happened in Florida. And like this is just like really like a like docuseries investigation about like Satoshi Nakamoto, and I love it. It's like real life mystery, and it's going on as we speak. But in the Kleinman case, where they were trying to get the rights to a bunch of money that was left on ledgers, lots of Bitcoin that was lost, right? There was this one document, and all the documents had been completely whited out, and they put them on the internet, and accidentally someone left a footnote on one of the documents, and the internet goes wild because there's this footnote on a document. And it leads to this guy named LaRoe. And I don't know if you heard about that at all.
No.
But he's like this gangster, like drug guy. And like, that's a horrible way to describe him. He's like a head top tier criminal. Like he's got his shit together. and there was like all this like background information suggesting that it was him. But what I find is so interesting, be it him, be it not him, be it any of these people, is this like crazy spree that people are going on trying to figure it out.
Mm.
It is like really a mystery. And I think it's super cool. And I love watching it unfurl. And I'm sure this will be historical. I'm sure that there will be many a movie made made about the finding of Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask next. If you're speculating, do you think it will ever get, it will be like a I am Batman moment in like 25 years that the person will like will get found out? Like, how do you, or do you think that the whole story will end with no one ever knowing?
I mean, it's impossible to tell. It literally, It could be anything. I mean, Satoshi could be dead. Like, for all we know, Satoshi could be gone. There are theories that Satoshi's in prison and therefore can't access the Genesis block. Just laying low, there's theories again that it's like a group of people, an entity, and I wouldn't put that past it, that it was an entity. There are conspiracies on, like, the guy who posted on Reddit basically describing what Bitcoin would be years before Bitcoin was initiated, stuff like that.
Really?
And, you know, it really could go any way at this point, but I think that it will be a big deal when Satoshi comes out.
Wow, that's intense.
But at the same time, what's cool about Bitcoin is that you don't know who Satoshi is, and it really plays into the decentralized factor. You know, it makes something more centralized to have a face, at least sometimes, and it's cool that it doesn't.
Sweet. That's really cool. So what about people in entertainment? I mean, has crypto really gotten a tangible boost from people in the mainstream singing about it and talking about it and stuff?
Yeah. What's super interesting about crypto as a store of value or stock, as opposed to traditional stocks, is that it's really led and driven by sentiment on the market. So if you were to take a graph of a Google Trends chart for the word Bitcoin, it actually lines up almost exactly to the market cycles of Bitcoin itself. Like, you can overlap the Google Trends of the search term Bitcoin to the physical chart of the market, and they almost to a T go with each other.
Wow.
So this sort of influence, having people look it up, having people get interested in it at this stage in an emerging market, is really big. It's, you know, for a better word, brand awareness, which is really what people, you know, when they're trying to get something out there, are looking for at this stage. Is we need people to look into it. We need people to want to understand what it is, because how are they ever going to buy it if they don't even know it exists? And that's the stage we're at, is that people don't know it exists. And people who do know it exists still think it's for nerds and hackers, and haven't gotten the memo that they can participate yet.
That's interesting. So, okay. So have you, this is a funny question. Who is the, how old is the oldest person you've educated about crypto, and how young is the youngest person? Like, have you ever talked to like an eight or 9 year old about crypto before?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I actually, I was emceeing a conference in Toronto. I'm actually in Toronto again, but the last time I was out here, it was the Crypto Chicks conference, and they actually had a hackathon for youth. And so they had children building on the blockchain, straight up children building on the blockchain. And it was super cool to see. I mean, think about it this way, you know, like whatever we learned when we were kids and the adults didn't get it. And we were like, well, no, obviously, like, this is how you type on a computer. And my mom's going like this. It's the same thing. These kids can build on blockchain. And, you know, just like children learn languages faster. It's the same thing. Coding is a language. And they're starting to pick it up, and people who are focusing on educating kids about it are getting it easier. But yeah, I've seen kids, I've worked with kids who are definitely into crypto and blockchain, and it's pretty cool. Older people, a little less so. I mean, I talk to my parents about it. I help them with it. You start to see older people at conferences, but a lot of them, for the most part, from at least what I've observed, come from a corporate background and are trying to dabble with their past experience and past companies in a new way in blockchain and cryptocurrency, not necessarily creating their own revolutionary technology.
Gotcha.
Sorry, old people.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that'd be cool to see like a 90-year-old like getting into it the first time. I like when old people learn about new things. Gives me hope. So, what about these music videos? When did you start doing that? And like, I watched all your music videos today. And sometimes it's like a dude singing. Sometimes it's a female. Are you doing the singing and the rapping when it's a female? Like, how do you actually get that whole thing done? Do you, like, if they're animated, do you work with other people, or do you do that stuff yourself?
Yes. So I do, and you can see on some songs, I outsource some of the vocals. like in my example of like the, what is it? The I Will Derive song.
Yeah.
And I have a woman from Nigeria actually singing that song. And so that was a fun idea that I had on Twitter. Like, okay, let me see who wants to sing a song from what part of the world, just to sort of get more people involved. The men, there are actually a couple different men on my songs that are male driven. So they're not even all the same guys. So some of the acoustic guys, one of them is actually, this is super funny, but have you ever seen that Harry Potter parody, Dark Lord Funk?
No, I've never seen that.
Got like millions and millions of views, but the guy who plays Voldemort in that parody actually sings my Do You Believe in Bitcoin song.
I've seen this. I'm looking at it right now. No, I've seen this before. Yeah.
That guy that's Voldemort in that video sings my Do You Believe in Bitcoin song.
Okay.
That's funny. On one note, I have an associate music producer that I work with in Brooklyn. His name is Chris. Man, I wasn't supposed to say that anyway, so now I'm not going to say the rest of it, but I work with him. He sings some of my songs. He sings the Because I Bought High song. So I have a couple guys. I have a guy, actually, one of my vocalists, one of the rappers, is from Singapore. JR, super cool guy. He sends me his stems from Singapore.
Okay.
And now I'm working with a couple new guys as well. So like I have a new song that's a rap song that I'm making a video for soon. And that guy's super cool. His name is Colin. And I've just been starting to work with him, but I think he's got a really great sound. So I do work with other people on my editing. I have an assistant editor, Emiliano, super cool guy. And he helps me with some of the stuff, but I really work from the ground up in the creative direction. It's hard to sort of explain, but you know, I pull all of my vector images. I get all of my animatable images. I put them into sequence, et cetera. And you know, to like, I don't know what a good way to explain it blanketly is, but I give instructions to who I work with. Yeah.
Sweet. That's awesome. So do you have to get like a permission or anything, or just cause it's a parody, you just do it and it's fine?
Fair use. And parody law. So fair use has to do with the four factors of fair use. And I believe this is the way that you affect the market of the original song, which I do not. Yeah, you know, no one's suffering because I'm making these Bitcoin songs. And the amount of the original song that you use, and then the creative twist that you take. So what do you add to it? And do you monetize off of it? And how much do you monetize off of it? And so as long as you follow the four factors of fair use, you're totally free to do what I'm doing.
Interesting. Yeah. Have you ever like thought about performing them live, like doing it at a concert with the people that created it, like doing a like crypto concert with all these songs?
Well, that's funny. You know, I know a lot of people who do crypto concert type stuff. Naomi Brockwell, Tatiana Moretz, they are both singers in the crypto space and they do live stuff. I've been offered to do some, but I like the production. That's really my end. I'm really like a TV kind of person.
Yeah.
There is a lot of that going on. It's funny. I actually know Mims, you know, like This Is Why I'm Hot, Mims. And so I wrote that song, This Is How I Bought. And it's funny because I know Mims through the cryptocurrency community. He's actually in the crypto community himself.
Really?
Yeah. He had an app. I haven't spoken to him in a little bit, but yeah, maybe like a month ago or something. But he had an app that they were working on for people to be able to monetize music and stuff like that and work and make songs on their iPhones. And that was pretty cool. But I met him at a crypto event. Yeah. And he actually really liked my song, which was cool.
Nice. Sweet. So how often do you put these out? Are you on some sort of schedule or just whenever you think of a new one? It's like you're like the Weird Al of crypto, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. It just really depends on the other stuff that I've got going on at the time.
Yeah.
I'm trying to solidly get at least one a month out. I'm hitting maybe two. I'm trying to do something new with the videos themselves, and bring some more like live action to it, in addition to just doing the animations that I have going on. But unfortunately, the live action videos take a lot longer and require a lot more in the physical world. I'm really good at giving my time to the digital world. I'm really good at working in my computer, but it's harder to pick someone up, get them in hair and makeup and put them in a set and stuff right. like that. That's really what it does require. Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I think we're just going to hang out for just like 7 or 8 more minutes, something like that. But my last question kind of is like, if you have, I mean, you know, since you focus on like demographics and stuff like that, like what, if someone's just like it right out of college, you know, like 21, 22 years old, they're trying to get educated on crypto and kind of get their feet wet. What advice would you give to them other than just start buying some, go to conferences? Like, what would you say to a person like that?
Yeah, meet people. Okay. Meet up people who are involved in the space. I mean, it's rightfully kind of scary when you look at it from the outside in. It's internet money. There are bad people in the world. But if you actually show up and see the community, you know, it starts feeling a lot safer. You get the idea that these are driven, hardworking people trying to build something. And it's very welcoming. You know, cryptocurrency is made up of, you know, these kinds of people who were focused on the tech, who were focused on themselves, who might have thought something weird was the right direction to go in. And it's really very inclusive of all sorts of people. So I do recommend getting out there and actually meeting people. Yeah.
Gotcha. So yeah, I think you mentioned this earlier, but maybe you just want to restate it again. Why don't you tell me like 2 or 3 of the bigger conventions or conferences in North America? And you're attending one right now, correct? Are you?
I'm in Toronto. I'm in Toronto in Canada.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Right now. But there is a conference. There's a big conference that happens in Toronto in August. It's called a Blockchain Futurist.
Okay.
And I'm actually going to be speaking at it. So that's happening in about 11 days now. And so I'm going to be speaking over there. It's going to be a lot of fun. They have like a cabana party with a pool in the back. It's a rager. They rent out the entire Rebel, which is like the coolest friggin' nightclub in all of Toronto. And it's all got right. like massive floors and like several stages and like 6 bars, and it's a really good time. In New York, Consensus happens every May, and that is probably what you would consider to be a big one. Consensus is a big one, and everyone sort of comes out to Consensus. I went these last 2 years. It's a good networking event as far as getting to meet people. There are lots of like parties and side mixers and meetups that are hosted around Consensus, and that's really where you would go to actually get to know some people. It's fun. Crypto people hang out at bars. Good times. So Consensus is really big. World CryptoCon is a really big one. So that's Vegas Blockchain Week, and it happens in October. The last week of October, it is World CryptoCon, Litecoin Summit, and I believe CoinGenda that are going on at that time. And they happen back to back over the course of a week, and tons of people come out for them.
Sweet. Are there any down in like the DC area? That's where I live.
I know of a couple guys who do a conference down there. It's not a major one. I think I did see some that like involve like members of government, which I thought were interesting, but they're really, really hard to get into and very expensive. I mean, there is stuff you can look online and find more information about it.
Sounds good. All right, let's get out of here. Why don't you tell people where they can find your work online? Everything that is plugged below in the show description as well. Why don't you tell people where they can find you on social media, your website, stuff like that?
Absolutely. So you can find me on Twitter at CryptoFinally. You can find me across the board at CryptoFinally. And that is Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. I'm on Minds, Steemit, DTube. And feel free to reach out with anything. Comments, questions, concerns.
Sounds good. All right, everyone out there, thank you so much for checking out Call Me Ignorant today. You can find this uploaded to YouTube, BitChute, and FreedomScoop.com as a video, and Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean as a podcast. If you feel like you've benefited from the show, you can want to support. You can donate via DLive, PayPal, or Streamlabs, or sign up with a monthly pledge on Bitbacker, Subscribestar, or Patreon. All of that is linked below in the show description. I hope everyone out there enjoyed the show. My guest today was Rachel Siegel. She goes by Crypto Finally on social media. You can find her information linked below in the show description. Have a fantastic day, everybody. Go inform yourselves. Nice talking to you, Rachel.